Gabriel program. You are cleared for departure. Have a good flight.
The Christopher Gabriel program begins now.
Your 50,000 watt sports leader in Fresno, the Central Valley, and for Portland Trailblazer guard Damian Lillard, who emailed Russell Westbrook late last night saying, next question. 940 ESPN, 940 ESPN Fresno.com. Your 1 hour and 39 minute tour, courtesy of your San Francisco Giants and John Miller, begins right now. 21 minutes, 4 seconds past the hour of 4 p.m. Pacific Daylight Saving Time. I am the host of 30-minute programs, 2-hour programs, 3-hour programs, whatever we can fit between no time and 3 hours. Christopher Gabriel, delighted to be with you. Lovely day here in the Central Valley, warmer than I care for, but you know my deal. Technical director, producer, hockey guy, Sharks fan. We haven't even talked about the Sharks at all. Giddy is not the word that I ever applied to Russ, but I know that he was happy. Giants fan, happy again, Russ, as I said, keeping us going in the right direction. On the program today, the truncated program, in about 30 seconds, my good friend from KOA News Radio, award winner, Marty Lenz, 435, the voice of the San Jose Sharks, Mr. Dan Rusinowski. Cannot wait to hear what he had to say about the madness that unfolded in SAP Center last night. Top five at five. Don't be that guy. Special Stanley Cup playoffs edition. 5:35. Instructor at CART. Talk about a golf tournament. Talk about all the interns we have in this building. And some interesting stuff there with Mr. Aaron Love. And then one more thing at 5:55. I don't want to keep him waiting any longer than I need to. Let's just bring him right on. Actually, before we bring him on, are we going to do his open today? Or are we just going to pass it? Because it is, you know, contractually, there's a lot of contractual things involved here, and I guess we have to stick to the contract.
The Mountain West Conference has never been the same since this former wide receiver graduated from Colorado State. He holds the all-time season and career reception marks for... Wait. Sorry, no. That was a different receiver. Never mind then. Here's Marty Lenz.
Yeah, you know, we don't want to get a fine with all your award-winning team, you know, your agents, your managers, so we had to play that. How you doing, Marty?
Thank you.
Well,
I'm doing swell.
Yeah, I bet your co-host April Zespa, she doesn't have a special open.
No, she doesn't. If I may brag a little more, so we won a Murrow Award, which is a really serious big award.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, so we run the RTNDA for our region for overall news excellence, which is our news team, which, of course, includes April, myself, and our other people. That we had some interesting news, breaking news, and some interesting interviews and stories last year. So now we're nominated to win the national. We'll see what happens.
I think that's great.
Pretty good year.
Well, very well deserved. Yeah. I think it's great.
Thank you.
We don't have a lot of time with you today, but we have enough time. NBA playoffs is what I want to talk about. Sixers. Your final four in the East is set, and it's seeds 1 through 4. I don't really care much about seeds. I do think these were clearly the best four teams in the East. Toronto, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, Boston, not in that order. You're going to have Milwaukee and Boston. You're going to have Philadelphia and Toronto. Toronto's never won an NBA title. The last one for Milwaukee was 71, Philly 83, Boston 2008. There's so many intriguing possibilities here. What jumps out at you right off the bat with these four teams that are left and with the two matchups that we have coming up?
Well, the Greek Freak. I mean, this is he is something else to watch. And I know we sometimes poo-poo, understandably, the regular season for the NBA. But, you know, a team that wins, what, they win 60 games, something
62.
Like that? 62.
Yep.
I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at. And this is a better Eastern Conference and Eastern side than what's been, what it's been in a while. So I'm fascinated to see the Bucks. It's funny when you talk about, well, 71, I was, what, four? I remember when the Sixers won in 83, with Moses Malone and Julius.
Let me correct myself.
I was a young kid.
You were right. It was 60. Not I'm thinking of the Tampa Bay Lightning. My bad. 60.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So I remember when Philadelphia won, I was a kid. I mean, we all wanted to be Dr. J. We all wanted to cruise across the lane and fly and Andrew Tony and be Mo Cheeks. But anyway, I remember that. So, I mean, I find intrigue. You know, the traditionalist in me, love to see a Boston Philly Eastern Conference Final, but the fact Toronto and I am fascinated to see what Milwaukee can do. 71, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you know, before he went to the Lakers. I wonder if that's the Greek Freaks, if eventually he does something great there. If he doesn't end up maybe in a more marquee team, I hate to see that because you like to see thriving teams in Milwaukee and places like that, Denver as well. So. But that's what jumps out at me. I mean, I think of all the teams, Boston's probably peaking at the right time. They struggled a little bit in the regular season, but they're peaking at the right time. But Toronto looks interesting as well. But there's some interesting matchups. I mean, it's a little more interesting than what I thought it could be. And it's chalk. It's 1-4.
Yeah.
So that's the interesting part as well. You do got the best teams in these playing.
You know, you mentioned the 71 Kareem Abdul-Jabbar team. And, you think about that team. We don't ever really talk much about – we talk about greatest
Oscar
teams.
Oscar Robertson,
in
too,
well,
right?
Well, it was Oscar Robertson, John McLaughlin. It was Bobby Dandridge.
Yep.
I mean, you had Lucius Allen. This was quite a basketball team. They were terrific. And then I don't know that anybody really thought that he was going to go to L.A. I know that he felt culturally just for a number of different reasons, he thought that he was going to be better in a larger city, in a city that was more conducive to, how he grew up. Not that L.A. was like New York, but it certainly cosmopolitan-wise was. But
right.
You mentioned Boston, Philly. You know, Philly has rarely had the advantage over Boston in the going back to the 50s and all the days of Red Auerbach and Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell, Red Auerbach. I'm just thinking Billy Cunningham and all those teams. And you mentioned the Mo Cheeks, Andrew Tony, the Fo-Fo-Fo team. You know, some of those teams were amazing. It was Andrew Tony. They used to call him the Boston Strangler. I think of those four teams. Of those four teams, the only team that has a player who can completely take over a series is the one you mentioned with right at the very back, and that is Giannis Antetokounmpo. We're going to finally see somebody different coming out of the East. No LeBron James there, obviously. If you had to pick somebody out of the four, who do you like?
Well, I'll lean to Boston just from a playoff standpoint that they're a little more seasoned in that. But I don't want to forget, and I'm drawing a complete blank, what's his name at Toronto is probably the best player, if you want to say,
Kawhi Leonard.
Kawhi Leonard,
yep.
Thank you. He may actually be the best guy of all of them in the East, but I'm not sure the complementary parts for Toronto are there. But there's a guy that literally can will himself and maybe will that team to get to the Eastern Conference Final. But I'll just pick Boston. Just because I think you look at the overall whole of the parts and the fact that I think they're a little more battle-tested. Milwaukee, this is new territory for them. And so I would probably, if I had to stack them, I'd probably say Boston and Toronto. And then I'd say, the outliers would probably be Philadelphia and then Milwaukee. But I actually think everybody's pretty evenly matched up this point. But maybe pick one, I'd say I could see Boston coming out of the East.
Yeah, I think that this is going to be, with no disrespect to the 76ers or the Raptors, I do think that I'm leaning with the Bucks, but this is going to be their biggest test because the Bucks do not, even though they had the best record in the East and the best record in the NBA this year, I don't think they have the deepest talent of the four teams there. especially against Boston, but I do think it's clear they have the best player, and for that reason, I think Giannis is ready to take them to another level. And finally, on the in the Western side, Portland is already in. What a remarkable game that was for Damian Lillard. There was a lot of debate on social media last night, good shot, bad shot. As far as I'm concerned, it was a great shot.
You make the shot. That is, this is the most stupid day. By the way, Damian Lillard, you know where he went to college?
CSU. I don't know.
No. Weber State.
Yeah.
Kid is from Oakland, California. And again, I know players develop late, but there's a kid that played in the Big Sky.
Yep.
And you do think to yourself, how does that guy not play? I mean, I guess Weber State is small D1, but how does he not end up?
You know what?
You know,
forgive my interruption. Weber State's had a great basketball history over there. They've been in the NCAA tournament a number of times. But to finish my point.
No one's going to confuse them with a Mountain West school or with a Pac-12 school.
To finish my point, I want you to comment on this. We've got about 2 minutes left. My point about Damian Lillard, and you were just hitting on it, is that the game is tied. He's sitting on 47. He's lit them up all night. It's very clear that he's either going to win the game himself or he's going to take it to overtime. If they're trailing, then yeah, he's going to go for a dribble penetration and see if he can draw a foul, force it onto the referees, or kick it out to somebody who's open. But I didn't have any problem with that shot. He's got that kind of range. He was shooting something like 38-39%. That's where he shot. He was sitting on 47. I'm perfectly good with that shot, and he's got that range.
Yeah, well, that's just crap talk from Playoff P. You know what I want to tell him? Play defense.
Yeah.
If you're out there, I know it's long range, but you've got 6 inches on the guy or whatever. Get up on him. Challenge him to go to the hoop. To me, sitting back like that, you're just daring him. And again, the guy was hot all night. To me, that's bad defense. Get a couple feet on him and smother the dude. Make him drive. Force him. Don't let him take that shot. That's bad defense. You know what? It's not a bad shot when it goes in, especially from a guy who's your big-time scorer, who's been shooting lights out all night. It's the most stupid debate, seeing good shot, bad shot. It's a good shot because it won the flipping game from your guy who already had 40-plus points.
I agree with you. I agree 100%. I saw Paul George's comment last night. It's a bad shot. It's a bad shot. No, it's not a bad shot. I mean, as you said, when you start with the fact that the shot won the series, it's not a bad shot. And it is a bad shot if it's 12-10, it's in the first quarter, and you're only 7 or 8 seconds into your shot, into the shot clock, into your offense, then it's a bad shot. But in that situation, I like it. You know, 8.5 minutes with Marty Lenz is better than nothing. And can you believe it? We're already done, Marty.
I can't believe it. Are you excited about the Sharks and Avalanche? I am.
I am. And in fact, one of my very good friends and somebody I introduced you to, Ryan Clark, terrific sports writer. He covers the Avs for the Athletic out of Denver. He's on this program tomorrow. I'm going to see him on Saturday for a follow-up to Game 1. I am very excited to see this series. It's going to be – I mean, these two teams are killing it right now, and I don't know who to take.
Yeah, well, I tell you what. The only advantage the Avs may have – is the fact that they're a little more rested. Though if I'm San Jose right now, you're feeling good, thinking I'm fired up. Let's play some hockey. I am excited about this matchup. I think this is going to be a 7-game series too.
I like what you did there. That the let's play hockey. You said let's play some, but let's play hockey. Of course, that is the big phrase they say at Xcel Energy Center right before Wild games. That you're kind of going back to your days in Minnesota.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I like it. Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. Take care.
All right. See you later. All right. Coming up, we're going to get to Dan Rusinowski. He is the voice of the San Jose Sharks. I have so many things I want to ask him about last night's game. What a game that was. An instant classic. Well, maybe not the entire game, but certainly the third period and overtime. This is the CGP.
More of the Christopher Gabriel program right now on 940 ESPN.
I don't know how many of you had to run out to the store last night. See if anybody, one of the local grocery stores, had oxygen tanks, because that's what we needed. Watching what was a good game for 2.5 periods, and then it was total insanity from about halfway in the third period through the overtime. As much as I was crazy at home watching this game, I cannot imagine what Dan Rusinowski, the elite voice of the San Jose Sharks, was feeling and experiencing in the SAP Center. But we're going to find out right now. Mr. Rusinowski, welcome back to the program.
Great to be on the Christopher Gabriel Show.
All right. So to win this series, the Sharks would have to come all the way back from down 3-1, which meant a win last night. Now, it's happened about 28, 29 times on balance. You know, not a big number when you consider how long hockey's been around. What was the mood in the Sharks' locker room? What was the mood in the arena last night, Dan?
Well, to start the day, you know, when I showed up for the morning skate over at Solder for America Ice, the Sharks practice rink, it was calm and confident. And, you know, there was, I think, a real boost to the team happened when they won in double overtime in Game 6 in Vegas and got that road victory out of the way that they were looking for. And then they had the 3-3 situation, anybody's game in Game 7. They just felt that they had the capability to do it if they stayed within themselves and took calculated risks and made sure they got the goaltender Martin Jones in a position where he could succeed. And, you know, when it was 3-0 in favor of Vegas early in the third, there was a lot of wind taken out of the sails of the fan base. They thought that they were witnessing the end of the season and a disappointing finish to the first round when there was so much hope and enthusiasm at the start of the year when they picked up Erik Karlsson in that big trade with Ottawa. And then so here we were down to the final wire, and I had to go back to 1994. You may or may not have seen my tweet on this after the game, but we talked about it during the broadcast for those fans that were listening on the radio in Fresno. And what we talked about was the captain of the Sharks, Bob Airey, at the time, was a two-time Stanley Cup champion with Pittsburgh. He had won with Mario Lemieux before he became a Shark. And, in fact, he's one of the broadcasters with the Penguins nowadays. And just before the first playoff series against Detroit, that fabled series when the Sharks won in Game 7, he wrote down a list on the back of a napkin, a restaurant napkin, and he wrote 16 points for playoff success. And you know what point number 14 was? Point number 14 was, you're never out of any game. And his explanation was, if there's a major penalty, you get a 5-minute power play. And isn't that what happened in the game last night? And the Sharks scored 4 goals. It was just magnificent.
I'm glad you told that story. I'd never heard that before. I heard it last night. I'm glad that all of our listeners had a chance to hear that. It is so true. And as you talk about what was the temperature of the room, so to speak, in the third period, I was talking with a hockey writer friend of mine who covers the Avalanche, and when in the first 10.5 minutes or so, the Sharks didn't score on those 2 power plays, not to mention the fact that they really carried the play to the Golden Knights, I had a feeling, even though the majority of the game was ahead of us, Dan, I had a feeling that maybe that was portending a bad omen for this team, because, you know, if you're not going to score there, and then what, 4 minutes later or so after the second power play, they're behind 1-0, and I thought the wind went out of their sails a little bit right then.
Well, it certainly felt that it could go that way, but this Sharks team is made of more resilient stuff than that, and that gets back to another one of Bob Airey's rules: one shift is as important as 20. And that one shift came, of course, the big one in overtime, but there were a couple of other ones. Timo Meier with 10 shots on goal just kept on coming. Melker Karlsson throwing his body into everybody, trying to provide an important role. And, of course, Erik Karlsson, why did they bring him here? To make big plays. He ends up with 2 huge assists in the big comeback, including that nice little dish on the game winner by Barkley Goodrow, yet another unsung hero in Stanley Cup playoff history. And that to me, was just so special to witness. The crowd, the moment that the Sharks scored that first power play goal, it was very interesting the way that it was on the bench, because they get the major penalty, and Logan Couture and Joe Thornton were looking at each other on the bench, and Joe Thornton apparently leaned over and got the whole team together and said, "Boys, we're going to score 3 blanking power play goals on this to tie the game." And that's all he said. Now, he's a 20-plus year veteran. He's going to the Hall of Fame. And Logan Couture said after the game, when he talks, you listen. And they scored the first goal a few seconds in, Logan, of course, scoring the first of 2. And he turned to Erik Karlsson on the play, and he said, "That's one." And he looked at the bench and held 1 finger up and said it again, "That's one," meaning we got 2 to go. And they would score 3 more. And it was one of the most incredible things I've ever seen, ever. One of the craziest hockey games you could ever imagine, and why this game is so beloved by those who watch it all the time.
My guest is the great voice of the San Jose Sharks, Dan Ruzanowski. A couple of things there. Saying that they're going to score three goals, Dan, the only time I've ever heard anything like that was back years ago, East Regional, NCAA East Regional, when Duke was down to Kentucky, double overtime, and 2.3 seconds to go. And as we later find out, Coach K told Leitner and Grant Hill and them, we're going to win this game. And they sure as heck did. You mentioned Carlson. Is Carlson 100%?
No. Eric Carlson is not 100%. He's managing his difficulties and doing a remarkable job of it. I think he feels pretty good. He can deal with it. It's not going to debilitate him. But, you know, that little extra gear, perhaps, he can only show on certain occasions. And he's just going to have to live with that. That's just the way it is for him. But what he does with whatever percentage he has is better than what most people give with 100% of what they have. And, again, he leads the NHL with 9 assists in this playoff series. I think it's the Sharks' record, if I'm not mistaken, for most assists in a playoff series. And that is another incredible feature. Brent Burns, on the flip side of that, Norris Trophy finalist, had a monster series. He played 42 minutes in the game that went to double overtime in Game 6, and he was over 35, I think, in this game last night. So, again, he's a workhorse. That's a big part of it. And let's not forget, too, that Marc-Edouard Vlasic, when he's playing, the team is undefeated. They're 3-0, and that's a big deal, too.
No question. All right, let's talk about the penalty. The penalty on Cody Eakin. Lots of post-game discussion from Gerard Gallant, and then there were the comments from Jonathan Marchessault, who said, and I'm going to read them for our audience, it's a bleeping joke to call 5 minutes for that. It changed the whole outcome of the game. Like, seriously, what is that? It's so disappointing. The game's not even close. It's 3-0. Call a two-minute minor, okay, but a five for something you don't even see. You just called the outcome. It's a bleeping joke. It's embarrassing. That's what it is. All right, you were there. You saw it. I thought it was a cross-check. I didn't think it was going to be 4 or 5 minutes because I didn't even see the referee's official up. The blood was on the ice. We know what unfolded. What is your take on it?
Well, it's an interesting standard because many people said, and the officiating manager, Don Van Massenhoven, I think upheld this, although they don't make any public statements about it. But when you have a situation like that, it is a judgment call by the official. They decided to do that. Now, there was another judgment call, too. Gallant was complaining that Logan Couture was embellishing a call when two teeth were on the ice and he had a couple of more teeth in his mouth and he needed to get off the ice to see the dentist. The other one was the embellishment or the Couture. Ironically, here's another one with Logan involved in Game 2 where he got a two-minute goaltender interference penalty that nullified a goal and changed the course of the game the other way that Vegas won. Like I said, you have to deal with all of those judgment calls every single playoff. There are human beings involved in making the call. They do the best they can from what they see on the ice. And they saw the injury, and they felt that it was worthy of a five-minute major. That's their decision. But let's flip it around. Where the heck was the Vegas penalty kill?
Right.
Because that was really good before. They stopped two other chances. So I don't think it's so much on the refereeing. That's maybe an excuse. You can't look at it that way. You have to just kill it off, and you have to deal with the situation that you're presented with. That's what the Sharks have done all series, and really the Vegas team did too. It's just that they spoke more about the refereeing in this particular game, and that's just the way it goes.
Well,
I don't agree with that.
No, and I'll tell you what. I can make an allotment for Gerard Gallant, head coach, being upset. I can make an allotment for everything that Marchessault said except for one thing.
Sure.
When he said it changed the whole outcome of the game, and you hit the nail on the head, it's not like their four power play, their four penalty killers, it's not like they were sent off the ice. They were there, and they, along with Fleury, failed. I mean, it's really that simple.
Yeah, and Fleury did the best he could. He made some unbelievable saves during that sequence, but you have to give the Sharks credit for persevering and for being the great team that they are. And that's the Stanley Cup playoffs. But like I said, you could make an argument for a two-minute call. You could make an argument for a double minor. You could make an argument for a major. The officials decided it was a major. The Sharks got the opportunity, and they seized the day. And that's what championship teams do.
There's no question about it. That really is the difference in winning and losing. When a door opens, is the team, is the individual going to walk through that door? And the Sharks burst through that door last night. My guest is Dan Rusinowski, play-by-play man, San Jose Sharks. Dan, talking about those four power play goals, I've watched hockey all my life. You've covered it seemingly your entire life. I said this on social media last night. I'm sure it's happened, but I've never seen four power play goals on a major. Have you seen that happen?
Well, I haven't seen it personally, but I know it's happened a couple of times, at least once in the regular season. I can't recall, maybe twice in the regular season over the course of the last few years. I don't have the exact date in front of me, but I know that the Islanders did it once, and I can't remember the other team. But it has happened very rarely a couple of times.
Going into overtime, did you have any sense that, you know, here the Sharks come all the way back, a furious rally, and then they, you know, they give up the extra man goal with the empty net at the other end. Did you get any sense at all that, you know, that they climbed the mountain, they summited the mountain, and then they got tied, and that maybe there was emotional advantage to the Golden Knights? Or did you sense that they had turned the emotional tide enough that it was a matter of time before they finally won the game and won the series?
Well, here's where the Sharks have been so battle-tested all season, and where that plays into the game last night. Because, Christopher, the Sharks have been in situations before where they've had to deal with injury and disappointment and everything else. Had this been a little earlier in the year, it could have been trouble, but the Sharks had a couple things in their favor. One, they had that electrifying crowd behind them. And number two, for the first time in the series, a team that had been losing in the game had fought back to not only tie the game, which had happened before, but actually take the lead, which the Sharks did. And so when they gave up that one goal, they just shrugged their shoulders and said, let's get right back to work. This thing isn't over. We've got an overtime coming up. Let's see what we can put together. We have total faith in ourselves that we can do this. And I think that that made a big difference, just the general resilience of the Sharks. While that was the first time, believe it or not, when LeBanc scored the goal to put the Sharks in front late in the third, that a team that had the lead had relinquished the lead to the other team in the entire series, which is incredible. And it was also the first game out of the seven that the team that scored first lost, which are two amazing thoughts about an amazing series.
Just a curiosity, you know, growing up in Chicago Stadium, I've said, you and I have talked about this before, Dan, that it's the loudest arena that I've ever been in. However, as NHL arenas go, when it comes to deafening sound, I've not been in as many as you've been in, but I've not heard many that approach what SAP Center sounds like because of that low, flat roof. The people are so engaged, at least on television, it sounded like it was absolute bedlam in there.
Well, it was. It was incredible, electrifying, beautiful to see, all of the adjectives that you can put together. And I think that you're hitting the nail on the head when it comes to the actual sound quality, because one of the things about most of the newer arenas is that they're rather cavernous. They're big. They have all of the amenities, and it takes space to do all of that stuff. SAP Center has the amenities too, but it's in a much more intimate setting, and I think that really helps in terms of not only the sight lines for the game of hockey, but also for the ability of sound to just crackle through the air. And that's exactly what happened in this particular game. It was getting almost the funereal in the third period when it was 3-0, and you know, people were really getting a little bit bummed out. And then they get that major opportunity, and when Logan scored so quickly to get it started, to get that first of four power play goals, there was really renewed confidence. And then the second goal came, that was the hurdle deflection, then Couture scoring again, and then LeBanc. And by that time, it had reached a crescendo, and it was back to where it's always been at the top of the league in terms of noise, excitement, and intensity. And, you know, the players really fed off of that, too. That really helped, and I think that that was a big part of the game.
Well, clearly, aside from those four power play goals, tremendous goaltending at both ends throughout the evening. The story of the night was indeed Joe Pavelski. What have you heard in terms of his condition?
Well, they took him to get medical attention immediately, obviously, and we haven't had any reports. See, the way this works in the Stanley Cup playoffs, Christopher, is it's sort of like If you're a reporter and you go to the penitentiary and you go down to Corcoran and you talk to all the inmates in there, none of them are guilty of anything. They're all innocent, right? Well,
yes.
Well, the same thing is true of injuries in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Nobody's hurt. Everybody's just fine. They're 100%. They're just not playing tonight. So it's very difficult to get any information, and I've always joked around beyond that example that if I were to call up the Federal Reserve Chairman and ask for this week's monetary policy data and what they're planning on doing, I'd be more likely to get an answer from him than from an NHL trainer or medical personnel person. So we aren't going to find out exactly what he's dealing with, but it's pretty obvious by looking at what happened. It was blood on the head. It was dripping down on the ice. He was carted off the ice by a couple of his teammates and medical personnel. And the good news that I hear, at least, is that he was, after being examined, going through the protocol for head injuries and everything else, was walking on his own power. And that's a good sign. But we don't know what his status is going to be. There's a practice tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock, and we'll probably get at least a better idea of where we are for Game 1, which, by the way, is going to be on Friday at SAP Center. We don't have a time yet, but we just found out today that Game 1 will be Friday. Game 2 will be Sunday against the Colorado Avalanche in Round 2. So Sharks have home ice again. Very quick turnaround, but all of you at the radio station will be hearing from me on all that pretty shortly anyway.
Can't wait. We've got about 90 seconds left. This matchup with the Avs, Sharks won the season series 3-0, but, you know, Tampa Bay swept Columbus 3-0 in the season series as well. How do you see it?
Well, there's a couple things going on. Number one, the Sharks are coming off the tremendous adrenaline of their great victories from Game 6 in double overtime and Game 7 in overtime, and they're going right into the next series. They have home ice, too, so those are advantages. The disadvantages are, of course, that Colorado has the rest after getting out of Calgary in 5 games, and they've got maybe the most dynamic superstar in the game that not a lot of people talk about, and that's Nathan MacKinnon. He's somebody that has Mach 4 speed. He has strength like Mario Lemieux and tremendous skills like Connor McDavid and Sidney Crosby. So he's very difficult to deal with. I know he's only one player, and they've got 2 or 3 others that are star-level players, but that's a guy that's a difference maker, really. And so the Sharks are going to have to deal with that in a playoff atmosphere. He raises the level of his play, too. So we know it's going to be a tough series, but we think that the Sharks can, at least if they get the recuperation in the next couple of days, have enough rest to get through the next 2 games and then get into that series. And if they can have some success and maybe even get a little bit of rest at the end of it, they'll be in a good position.
Boy, I tell you, it's always great hooking up with you. It's been too long. That's my fault. Dan, enjoy this series. It's going to be a blast, and we will hook up with you again for sure.
I'm looking forward to that, Christopher. Thanks, and thanks to everybody in all of San Joaquin Valley for tuning into our broadcast. It really means a lot. Great partnership.
We love it, my friend. Be well, and go Sharks.
You bet. Thanks.
There you go. Dan Rusinowski, play-by-play voice, San Jose Sharks. This is the CGP.
Christopher Gabriel returns.
Just a little bit of time to go in hour number one, a shortened hour number one because of the San Francisco Giants. Giants did win today. They beat Toronto. Final was 4-0, was it not? Did it stay at 4-0? Yeah, good game. Good game for the Giants. Nice little series up at the old Sky Dome. I think it's called, is it Rogers Center now? They change the names in these places so often. NHL game going on right now. Stanley Cup game in the Eastern Conference. Game 7, Capitals, Hurricanes. Capitals up 2-0 in that one. And, of course, we have some NBA games coming up tonight as well, which should be very interesting. Jazz and Rockets. Rockets lead that series 3-1. Game is in Houston. And, of course, at Oracle at 7:30. Warriors up 3-1 on the Clippers, they are looking to close that out, and there's just, you know, I hope they come out early, I hope they come out strong early on and just don't mess around and put this series away. Final hour coming up. This is the CGP.
The Top 5 at 5 is sponsored by the Law Office of Josh Lazar and Associates. And now, from Fresno, California, to the furthest reaches of the galaxy, here are your Top 5 at 5 sports talkers of the day.
Top 5 at 5. for a beautiful Wednesday here in the Central Valley. Five stories that we haven't really talked about any of these. You know all of these. Wait, we talked about one of them. But we're going to give you a longer take on these. First one we're going to give you in a second is, you know, one of these, six of one, half dozen of the other. Take it for what it's worth.
Number one.
So, if you didn't know already, the NFL draft is not a heavy bet market. Doesn't draw a lot of interest from standard bettors, from the public. There's, you know, you're trying to separate fact from fiction, who's going to do what, and so on. But it's still there. It's out there, and the various sports books post odds. So Kyler Murray has been the favorite, as you would imagine. And I should add that I'm not a bettor, but more than that, more power to you. If you are and you can make some money off of it, but I'm not one who really cares much about odds, because odds, people, we know when they're setting odds and what, it's just, I don't know. I'm not really interested in a team of experts who are trying to set a line to get money coming in one way or money coming in the other way. Although I will say it is remarkable, isn't it? How many times you see the point spread and it comes right to that. That's just amazing. Nevertheless, Kyler Murray remains the heavy favorite to be the number one overall pick. But the odds have moved a little bit. They have moved a little bit. They have dropped... they have dropped considerably in recent days, because the person who is starting to rise up as the two people who are starting to rise up and make a little bit of dent in these odds are Nick Bosa from Ohio State and Alabama's great defensive end Quinnen Williams. So, you know, again, the mock drafts. I mean, if you wonder sometimes why the mock drafts, you know, why so many of them come out. Well, part of that is the guys in Vegas are watching what this guy, and this guy, and so on are saying. I've seen no less than two dozen of these, and I know there's a lot more. I'm just not looking for all of them. But Murray is still your favorite. Do you have a favorite? Who do you think's going to go? Who do you think's going to go number one in the draft? Do you think Arizona's going to take Murray? Do you think that Arizona would even consider trading down a couple of spots? I don't see that as a possibility. I don't think they're gonna make that move. I do think they're gonna take Murray, but you know, again, you're not going wrong if you take a guy like Quinnen Williams, or for that matter Nick Bosa. I'm higher on Quinnen Williams than I am on Nick Bosa, but Murray just has that quality about him, and Keon Myers and I talked about this the other day. He just has that quality in him that you don't want to be the team that needed a quarterback, and 5 years from now, you're looking at inside your organization, you're looking at your season ticket holders, your fan base, and saying, yeah, we did have a chance to take him, and we passed on him, even though, you know, we thought that we knew what we were doing, and yeah, he's made the past three or four Pro Bowls. You know, that's the concern, and it's all because of Baker Mayfield last year. What he did, and again, it's a moot point. We're not having this discussion if Kyler Murray was 6'3 or 6'4.
Number two.
Well, it's a shot that happened up at the Moda Center in the beautiful city of Portland that Blazers fans will never forget. It's going to be replayed forever. I mean, for all of the great, crazy shots that we've seen Steph Curry make, you know, this was one to end a series, and end a series that was a little nasty in terms of the back and forth. Teams don't like each other. A lot of that is because of Russ Westbrook. You know, it's funny to me how often fans around the country, when they don't have a rooting interest in a particular series, no matter what the sport is, will turn on a team. The team doesn't care, but nevertheless, they'll turn on a team because of one guy being Russ Westbrook, that just being like him. I don't know anybody in terms of people who didn't care for either, you know, meaning root for either Portland or Oklahoma City. I didn't know anybody who was rooting for Oklahoma City, and I think it's because of Russell Westbrook. And again, that's neither here nor there. Russell doesn't care. But Damian Lillard, he cares. And he said that that shot, he called it the last word. And he was asked last night, why did you shoot the shot? And his explanation makes perfect sense. He said, I didn't want to put it into the referee's hands, where if there was contact or maybe they get away with contact or I end up having to take a tougher shot because there was contact and they don't want to decide the game. So I was standing there looking at the rim and I was like, this is a comfortable range. I said this last night on Twitter and I saw a couple of people, a lot of people around Twitter and some media people in town saying it was a bad shot. It was not a bad shot. Paul George coming out saying it's a bad shot. That's not the story that's going to be written. No, Paul, it's not, because you lost. The story that's going to be written is exactly what Damian Lillard said. He's got 47 points. He has lit up Oklahoma City all night. Nobody's been able to stop him. The game is tied. It's a different story if Portland's coming up court and they're down. They're down a point. Then it's a whole different situation. But it's not a bad shot when you're tied, you're at home, you've come all the way back, you've outscored Oklahoma City 13-2 in the final, well, at that point, 10-2 in the final 3:06. You're feeling real good about yourselves. And you have one of the best guards in the league who has got range. That, as you saw, that was 37 feet, and that wasn't an effort for him. I like the ball in his hands in that situation. It was clear when he was pounding it out near half court. It was very clear what he was going to do. I'll admit, I was surprised that he didn't go hard at George and then step back. You know, he just took a couple steps. And George realized at about the 2.5, 3-second mark, George realized, you know, oops, hold on here. He's going to shoot. You notice, remember when George moved up a couple of feet, just took a step and moved up a couple of feet, but didn't matter. He was already into a move, and he had a clean look at it. So he also gave – Lillard also gave credit to his workout trainer, Phil Beckner. He said – this is what he said last night. He said, trainer, he was like, you're going to hit one of these. He just kept saying, you're going to hit one of these. And when I was standing there, I was like, I'm going to shoot it. It's a little bit off. It was a little bit off of me, and I was thinking this was enough space for me to just raise up and shoot it in the game. And where that's coming from is when they were in Oklahoma City going through some workouts, his trainer, Phil Beckner, kept telling him, take a couple of deep ones. Get closer to midcourt. You might need one of these shots as the series continues. And he was right. And as I said, Paul George saying, that's a bad, bad shot. I don't care what anybody says. That's a bad shot. But, hey, he made it. That story won't be told that it was a bad shot. We live with that. No, again, I'll say it again. No, that there's no story, Paul. There's no story to be told. The story is he nailed a 37-foot shot. You gave him too much room. I mean, ultimately, it's on the defense. But he made a great shot. You got to tip your hat and say, see you later. Well, actually, that's what Damian Lillard did. He turned and waved to the Thunder as they were leaving the court.
Number three.
Sixers take out the Brooklyn Nets last night. And their coach, the Nets coach, Kenny Atkinson, said, talking about Sixers, they're going for big things. I think they can compete for a championship, quite honestly. Everybody in the Sixers thinks they can. This is a team that dropped game one at home in this series and then just ripped off four straight victories. And they scored a ton of points en route. This is a team that's got a lot of talent. You know, any team that's got Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, and Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler seems like the guy who's a little out of place there. Not to mention Tobias Harris, J.J. Redick. I mean, this is a team that is playing tremendous basketball right now. They're playing as well as they've played all year. And Brett Brown has been saying this. He's been saying, you know what, we're coming together. And you saw that in this series. You definitely saw that in this series. Now, what happens next against Toronto is anybody's guess. Toronto has had their own playoff ghosts, you know, never being able to, the last couple of years, of course, they had LeBron in the way, but a couple of years, the thought was, is this finally the year that Toronto gets out of the Eastern Conference? And it's never been that way. Well, now they've got a guy who is a stopper and who is an answer and is a guy who can come up big from pretty much anywhere on the court in any given moment, Kawhi Leonard. You know, he may be the difference in this series. I don't have a lean. I'll have a lean before they play game one. But right now, I don't have a lean. But they're tough. And I'm with Marty. I wouldn't mind seeing a Sixers-Celtics battle, but I've seen so many of those. There's been so many Sixers-Celtics battles. Not quite the same thing right now that it used to be. You know, especially back in the 80s when it was, you know, Moses Malone, Julius Erving, Billy Cunningham, Maurice Cheeks, Andrew Toney going up against Bird, McHale, Parrish, Danny Ainge, DJ, Dennis Johnson, Bill Walton. Those were some unbelievable battles. And you can go back much further, obviously, to the days of Russell going up against Chamberlain. But for most of us, we'll think about the 80s and those battles. These two teams, the way they're comprised right now, you know, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Al Horford and Gordon Hayward, these two teams have not had that much time as they're assembled to have a lot of history and a lot of hatred, if you want to use that word. You know, the fans have it. The organizations, the history of the organizations have it. These two teams haven't had enough of that yet. Put them together in a seven-game series that's for the Eastern Conference Final. That'll change probably in a couple of possessions. I'll have a lean. I just don't have a lean yet.
Number four.
Looking at hockey, Washington still up late in the first period on Carolina. 2-0 in their best of seventh game. Last night, of course, we already detailed the Sharks' victory over Vegas with Dan Rusinowski, play-by-play voice of the Sharks. The other series that came to an end last night at Game 7, it was, again, the Boston Bruins beating their original six rival, the Toronto Maple Leafs, beat them 5-1. The game was a lot closer. You had some empty net goals at the end there after it went up to 3-1. But, I mean, it was 2-1 going into the third period. Toronto didn't really show up in Game 6. And then they did show up for Game 7, but, you know, it was too late at that point. But this, you know, you talk about a team that has had their number. The Bruins, they've played 27 Game 7s. They're 14-8 at home. Toronto is 12-12 overall in Game 7s. But this is, I believe it's the third straight time that the Bruins have eliminated the Toronto Maple Leafs. And as you look at hockey in North America, no Canadian team has won the Stanley Cup since Montreal did in 1993. So it's going to be 26 years without a cup for Canada. And so for a Canadian team, and so if you wonder sometimes why our friends north of the border have put so much stock in the Olympics and the World Championships, it's because they've not won a Stanley Cup. And I'm, they take that as seriously as most folks down here take baseball. I mean, it's a big deal, as you would imagine. And it's almost hard to believe that it's been 26 years, but it has been 26 years, and you know, they'll try again next year.
Number five.
Well, we did talk about Marchessault, Jonathan Marchessault, and the comments that he had along with Gerard Gallant last night. Marchessault saying it's a bleeping joke, talking about the five-minute major for the cross-check. If you missed it earlier, he said it's a bleeping joke. To call 5 minutes for that, it changed the whole outcome of the game. Like, seriously, what is that? It's so disappointing. The game's not even close. It's 3-0. Call a two-minute minor, okay? But a five for something you don't even see, you just call the outcome. It's a bleeping joke. It's embarrassing. That's what it is. You had Sharks coach Peter DeBoer saying it was the craziest game he'd ever seen. You had a lot of confusion. I mean, when that play happened, because you saw the referee and you didn't see his arm go up at first, and then they talked about it. I don't know in hockey. I don't know how they couldn't call that. I can see where the Vegas Golden Knights were frustrated, but again, it comes down to defense. And they got that first one. The Sharks got that first one. And I don't know, you know, Russ, I don't know if Fleury got rattled, but that first one, it was really the second one for me that suddenly it looked like, okay, they're gonna go here. Did you think that they'd get more than one goal on that? You did? Yeah. I thought they'd get one, maybe two. Don't tell me you thought they'd get four. Yeah. I didn't think they'd get four. I didn't think there was any chance that they were going to get four. But, man, what a night. It's a situation where you're up 3-0. Yeah, if you're on the Vegas bench, you don't like the fact of what just happened. But man, you got to suck it up and deal with it, and they didn't. Top 5 at 5.
More of the Christopher Gabriel program right now on 940 ESPN.
Coming up at about 5:35, Aaron Love from CART. Going to join us. We have like 150 of the, okay, not 150. We have like 12 of their interns, Center for Advanced Research and Technology. And there is a tie-in with sports. It's about a golf tournament. We're going to talk about that in just a second, but I said earlier in the program, you know, we do this fun little segment at about 5:25 every Wednesday, and I said this would be the Stanley Cup playoff edition of this.
Don't be that guy.
Yeah, don't be that guy. Don't be that gal. Don't be a group of people who are doing something. You know, maybe it's a friend, it's a family member, a neighbor, whomever, that you pull the person next to you and you say, hey, you don't be that guy. You don't want to be that guy. Well, as I said, this is Stanley Cup playoff edition, and the guy that, yeah, you don't want to be this week or last night, It would have to be Marc-Andre Fleury, the goalie for the Vegas Knights, who after the 5-minute major, it's 3-0 Vegas, then over the next about 3.5 minutes, well, this is what happened.
Here's Carlson, his shot blocked, back across Couture. LeBanc will bump it back. Eric Carlson shoots it.
Wearing that horn out, let me tell you, that made it 4-3. And as I wrote on Twitter last night, and as I said to Dan Ruzanowski a couple of minutes ago, I've been watching hockey my entire life. I mean, I go back to the original six. I've watched a lot and covered a lot of college hockey. I have never seen 4 power play goals on a 5-minute major. Never. Dan said it's happened. I certainly believe him. I'm sure it's happened. I've just never seen it. So it's 4-3, and then Vegas pulls their goalie. They pull Fleury, and with 47 seconds to go, they get the equalizer. We go into overtime, and again, this is the Stanley Cup playoff edition of Don't Be That Guy. Once again, front and center, Marc-Andre Fleury. So I was watching the game on NBC Sports Network California, NBC Sports California, and the studio guys, they had already set up outside. They took the whole set, They're outside, and they're thinking that it's going to be a 4-3 win, and then obviously word got to them that it was 4-4. Some of the images that we saw, though, when they scored the goal to win 5-4, there was one luxury suite that was loaded with ex-49ers and some Sharks alums. They're all in Sharks jerseys. And you're watching football players do what football players do. They're throwing guys around. They're bouncing off the glass of the other luxury suite. One guy, and Russ, you would know who it is. One player was lifting another guy up, and the player who was doing the lifting was about 6'2", 6'3", but he's lifting up a former offensive lineman. I think it was an offensive lineman who's about 6'8", and he's lifting him up like you're lifting up a can of soda, like it was no big deal. But they're bumping, they're checking, they're doing all kinds of stuff, and it was an amazing scene last night. I didn't have a stake in the game one way or the other. Certainly wanted to see the Sharks win. You know, Russ is a Sharks fan. People I work with here in the building are Sharks fans. Certainly wanted to see them win. Didn't want to see Vegas go ahead and win. You know, it's interesting how playoff hockey works. We talked about how Tampa Bay, they swept Columbus in the regular season, three straight games, and then Columbus just sweeps them out of the playoffs. Calgary had similar success, if I'm not mistaken, against Colorado Avalanche during the regular season, and then the Avalanche take them out in five. And it's just, you never know what's going to happen when you get to the playoffs. And, of course, I used to know what that was like when the Chicago Blackhawks actually had a good hockey team. I don't know. Sources telling me that the Blackhawks are thinking about going down to the International Hockey League. They're going down to the IHL. I had my fun. I had the three cups in 6 years. And a lot of folks thought it was going to be more, but they got hit with salary situations. They had to get rid of guys. They had to, they basically came out and said, we're going to be bad this year. And they were. Well, they've been bad for a few years. But tomorrow, following up on the Sharks theme, we are going to have my very good friend, Ryan Clark, who is the beat writer covering the Colorado Avalanche for The Athletic out in Denver. And we'll have Ryan on. We're also going to have Natalie Benson on tomorrow as well. The GCC playoffs start Friday right here at the Aquatic Center, so we'll have Ms. Benson on to talk about her team. And I think they're either a 4 or 5 seed going into Friday's action. I believe the Bulldogs play at 5 at the Aquatic Center, and then you've got semifinals on Saturday, championship match on Sunday. Coming up, we're going to talk with Aaron Love. This is the Christopher Gabriel Program.
Christopher Gabriel returns.
A couple of weeks ago, I walked into work, and it was about, 8:15 in the morning, and I get back to what we call the bullpen, where all the program directors and what have you sit, and there were 12 young people there, young people high school age, and it was very clear that it was not a tour. They were there for something different. Well, these young juniors and seniors are a part of CART. CART is the Center for Advanced Research and Technology. You can find them at CART.org, C-A-R-T. And it's a fascinating place. I'm going to have one of their instructors talk a little bit with you about what they do. We're going to talk about a golf tournament coming up as well. Aaron Love. He is a Fresno State grad. He is a digital media and graphic design instructor at CART. He joins me right now. It's good to see you, my friend.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. So I will confess to you that I had never heard of CART, knew nothing about it. So I gave what the acronym is. What is CART?
Well, CART stands for the Center for Advanced Research and Technology. It was established in 1997. It's what's considered a joint partnership between Clovis Unified and Fresno Unified. And to our knowledge, it's the only one like it in the entire nation. So it's a pretty special place. And it's pretty neat that two districts came together and built this school together.
So it's a joint partnership between Fresno Unified, Clovis Unified.
Yes.
It was founded in 1997. Why was it founded? Was it founded because there was thought amongst those who were creating CART that Fresno Unified and Clovis Unified were lacking something, or it wasn't that they were lacking something. They wanted to hit something a little bit harder in a more specific way to give, in this case, upperclassmen a better feel for different areas, whether it's technology and so on.
Well, I think the two districts together saw a need for students to take advantage of a career technical education opportunity, and they recognized that need back in 1997 and worked together to make it happen. And so here we are now in 2019. Students have been coming to CART for the last 19 years, and we've been doing some pretty cool things there, some pretty great things. And there's lots of great things going on in Fresno Unified, lots of great things going on in Clovis Unified. And what's really neat about our program is students from both districts come together. They work together on projects that last maybe 4 to 10 weeks long. And that's just something that you can't see created in other environments. So CART's pretty special because it brings those students together.
Aaron Love is my guest, digital media and graphic design instructor at the aforementioned CART. So what are the areas of instruction here? And I'm going to say that I'm making a very small joke that's not funny. There's no sports teams at CART.
No sports okay. teams at CART. All Lots right. of competition, though.
Right. There is competition. What are the areas of study for students that come to CART?
I will say that while we don't have sports teams, we have plenty of athletes because we have two sessions. We have an AM session and a PM session. So there's plenty of athletes that come through our program. In fact, Katie Anmundson, who's a volleyball player for Clovis North, she's in my class right now, and she's doing a great job on and off the court. And that's just one example. But at CART, we have labs everywhere from forensic research to biotechnology to digital media and graphic design and everything in between. So there's about 15 different labs for students to choose from. So if a student can find something, an elective class that they're interested in, they could come to CART and take that. And one thing that makes our program really special is the integration that happens with the CTE education. We integrate English into all of those classes. It's pretty amazing.
So how does, as I said, we have 12 CART interns here right now. They join us a couple of days a week. And we have seven stations in the building. They're focusing primarily on three of them, I believe. But I have three who have been assigned to 940 ESPN. How did they get funneled to our building? How did that happen?
Well, that depends on the lab teacher. And so the marketing lab that you guys are working with, they probably reached out to somebody here at the radio show and saw if there was an opportunity and a need for students to come in. And really it takes business partners, you know, to be willing to invest in the lives of a student at one of the local high schools and somebody to say yes and bring those students on site and be willing to teach them and be patient with them. And really that gives students an experience that they're going to remember for a lifetime. In our class specifically, in the graphics class, I work with a video instructor, and we're able to pair our students up at times with a real-world opportunity. For instance, Dave Standifer at AP Performance in Clovis, he was able to bring some students onto his site, and they completed a commercial for him that he was able to use to promote his company. It's currently looping on his website right now, and they used it at a local movie theater. So that worked out really good, and that's another example of how business partners can be working with students at CART.
Aaron Love is my guest. We're going to be talking about the golf tournament at Belmont Country Club on Monday, June 3rd. We'll talk about that in just a second. It's a big fundraiser, and we're going to tie this into sports. There's no question about it. How do students find out about you? Is it something that is just out there amongst Fresno Unified Schools, Clovis Unified Schools, and they're aware of it? Are there flyers up on bulletin boards? Is it an aggressive marketing campaign that starts at your end? How does that work?
Well, we believe that we're in partnership with Fresno and Clovis Unified, and so we're just another opportunity for students. And there's tens of thousands of students in both districts, and there's really great things going on at all of the high schools in both districts. In fact, there's lots of great CTE programs happening in Fresno Unified and Clovis Unified. And so CART is just an alternative for those students. It's a great place for students to come for half of their day that may be different than what they're experiencing at their home school. And so our students will come for half the day and take a class again that they're interested in. The way that they hear about it is we go out to school sites, and we usually visit those sites in late fall and early spring, and we talk to as many students as we can. The school that I visit is Sunnyside High School, and I've been going to that school specifically for probably the last 6 or 7 years.
Different instructors assigned to different schools?
Yes.
Do any of you have multiple ones?
Some teachers have it in their schedule. They're able to visit multiple schools, it's our opportunity to go out and visit campuses and talk to students, and we don't necessarily have a recruiting budget. You know, we don't have an advertising budget, but we do have to work with the schools to find the students that would be interested in our program, and so we'll visit the schools, and we'll share information about our program. We'll invite them to come visit. We have parent nights in January where parents could come and visit, and then we have an application that just wrapped up, a deadline that wrapped up in February, and so we're currently inviting, we just invited parents of future students to come visit our campus, and that was an amazing thing that we didn't expect all these parents to show up, and they came and they saw our campus, and it was really cool to tell all the new prospective parents about what we were doing on our campus.
But you mentioned recruiting budget, so immediately that I start thinking about 4-star recruits, 5-star recruits, and so on that we talk about with football and basketball and other sports. But more seriously, you have so many students out there. I'm sure that you don't have availability for all the students that may want to come to CART. How does that work? Are there minimum requirements? Is the admissions process one that is each individual person is looked at by a team of people? Is there a lottery? How does it work?
So our application deadline ends, and in around February, second week of February or so, we have about 1,400 spots on our school campus during the course of the day. So it's about 750 in the morning, or about 1,500 spots, I guess, about 750 in the morning, 750 in the p.m. We like to fill half of those with Clovis kids and half of those with students from Fresno. And we like to really keep it balanced. In fact, our teachers on campus, half are hired through Fresno and half are hired through Clovis. And so it's a unique balance of teachers and students on our campus. And so we fill up those spots as quick as we can. And if there's too many students to apply for any one given class, we have what's called a lottery where we pick names and draw names. We have a couple more spots available. So even though our lottery deadline ended, if students are still interested in applying, we'd love to get them to apply. We have some spots open in our PM session, so we'd love to get those students to apply.
And how do students get to your facility? Where is your facility? Tell me about your facility.
That's another great thing that with the support of Fresno Unified and Clovis Unified, students are provided transportation. So we're a public institution. It doesn't cost anything for students to go out of pocket.
So there's no tuition?
No tuition.
Okay.
Absolutely not. And so it's funded by Fresno and Clovis equally. And so transportation is also provided by both districts. And so students from both cities could come to Fresno, and bus transportation is provided to and from our facility. If they're interested, they could go to our website and call. We have one counselor that would be happy to talk to them. We invite people on campus to show them around. There's lots of different ways for people to come check out what we're doing. Our website has lots of pictures on it. If you haven't been there, it's a pretty neat facility to come check out. And as I mentioned, there's lots of great things going on in both districts. We're just in addition to that.
So we're talking with Aaron Love. He is a digital media and graphic design instructor at CART. So you approached me. You were telling me about the golf tournament, and it's a fundraiser, and it's designed to fund scholarships. Mm-hmm. So when you initially told me that, that's when I thought, well, what is the tuition? Because I didn't see tuition anywhere on the website, and I thought, so is this going to be something that's just ridiculous? And you said, no, this is not, and you explained it. So what are scholarships for? And then we'll talk about the golf tournament.
Well, a few years back, there was a study done on our students and what they were doing after leaving CART. And we found that about 95% of our students were going on to post-secondary education, maybe a UC, a four-year college, maybe a Ivy League school or a vocational school. And so that was a few years ago, probably about a decade ago. But we still have a lot of students that are going on to post-secondary education. And so every year we try to have an evening for scholarship night for our seniors that are leaving and give away thousands of dollars, sometimes tens of thousands of dollars. And usually that's done through private donors or people who come in and have a specific scholarship for something and they want to honor a student with that.
So somebody who's in a particular business, a particular line of work, and they want to fund or offer a scholarship, have a scholarship available for an individual who is going to be continuing in that same field.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And sometimes it's earmarked for something like that, and sometimes it's not. You know, it could be open to any student who's headed off to, you know, a junior college or any institution for that matter. And so we've never done an official fundraiser for this event, but we're always trying to get more money for our students to give to them to help them, you know, at that next level. And I remember when I graduated from Fresno High, I remember getting a $300 scholarship, and I thought it was going to last me years, you know. And I just remember how important that was to me. And I remember using that money to purchase books, but it was encouraging to get that. It made me feel really special at the time. And so for our students who, some of them have never received, you know, a scholarship or a check with their name on it, this could be that first time. And so in that, we've never done an official scholarship a fundraiser for anything like this. So, you know, we thought what better way to generate some additional business partners and raise money for a really great cause, which is our students. And so we decided to put this golf tournament together to do those two things.
Yeah, so, yeah, you do have this golf tournament. It's going to be on Monday, June 3rd at Belmont Country Club. Let's talk about this. You told me how it came about, but what are some of the fees? Are you encouraging people to come in as individuals, to come in as foursomes? How is that all going to work?
Yes. So we would love to have people sign up as a group. You know, as you know, when you're playing golf with people that you know, it's a little bit more fun. But if you're signing up as an individual, that's great too. We'd love to pair you up with people. And, you know, you might meet somebody new out there that you have something in common with. And we were able to work with Belmont Country Club. They recognized that this is our inaugural event, and they were being great hosts for us and working with us and walking us through the process to make this thing special. We're working with Printosaurus to do our signage, and they've done a great job consulting us through this process. So far, we've been able to get some really great sponsors, Cook Land Company, Fresno Unified, Clovis Unified. NJR Creative Group has come alongside of us, and we've been getting some golfers steadily. Have some really great raffle prizes that we want to give out, but if we don't have golfers, we don't have any people to give those prizes to. And so what we really need right now are golfers to sign up and play. The fees to sign up are $125 for if you're playing as a group of four, it's $125 per person. If you sign up as an individual, it's $150. And again, all this money is going to a really great cause, and that's scholarships for our students.
And is the hope, I mean, I forgive the naivete of this question, Aaron, is the hope that not only through this individual and foursome fees that people, companies are also going to say, oh, by the way, here's a, you know, let me just throw a check your way for this as well. I mean, is that the goal as well, to get, you know, to try to make as much on this as possible for the scholarships?
Not necessarily. We have it built into our budget that, you know, people are going to sign up to play, and we want to give them an opportunity to play golf at a beautiful golf course like Belmont and have a unique experience. You know, play alongside of other golfers, and we're planning to have some student volunteers out there, so we'd love to have those golfers interact with those students and ask them questions about what they're doing at CART. Certainly there's going to be raffle prizes and silent auctions.
And there's sponsorships as well. There's, I mean, people, companies, whatever, could come in at different levels and sponsor as well.
Yeah, so we have that going on. But the idea isn't, I don't anticipate at dinner asking for any more money or anything. That's
right.
Really not the point. But I would love for golfers to have an experience at this tournament and see that this is a great cause and make it a fun event that they want to come back and do it again next year. And I imagine that, you know, 10 or 20 years down the line, we'll be celebrating our, you know, 20th annual CART golf tournament. And we have, you know, CART alumni now playing who are current business owners, you know, and they're out there playing and supporting our cause. So long term, I'd love to see this thing, you know, grow into something really big. But it starts with the inaugural golf tournament.
So give folks the details as to how they get involved with this.
Yes. So our website is CART.org. So that's CART.org. You can go to that website, and right at the top, there's a banner with a link to, you'll see Belmont Country Club text on there. You could click on that and download a registration form. If you want to email me directly at alove@CART.org, you can do that as well. You could give us a call, and we'll give you all the information. If you would like to just talk over the phone, that's perfectly fine. On our website, there's lots of sponsorship opportunities. There's ways to sign up to play golf. We have some people that have come alongside of us, as I mentioned, as sponsors recently. Famous Brand Jerky is going to come along and provide some snacks for the golfers as they play. And we're working with a local brewery to come out and offer tastings to golfers as they're playing. Breakfast burritos included,
so it's
as well as lunch.
So it's going to be an A to Z event. It's going to be a full day for everybody that's coming out. They're going to have a great time. They're going to eat. They're going to have some beverages. They're going to have a chance to win some stuff. And then ultimately the big winners here are going to be the kids.
Yeah, absolutely. The kids are going to win through this deal. And I forgot to mention it's a shotgun start at 10 a.m.
Okay.
So we're hoping, since it's on a Monday, maybe somebody could come in and answer a couple emails and come out to the golf course at 10 for that shotgun start. But we believe that this is a great opportunity for our students and for other people to learn about what's going on at CART. So hopefully you'll come out.
And we'll make sure to get that out on social media for you as well. Happy to do that.
Thank you.
Folks, he is Aaron Love, and he's one of the instructors over at CART. And again, you can get all the information real simple, CART.org, and the event is Monday, June 3rd, Belmont Country Club, 10 a.m. shotgun start, as Aaron just said. I hope it's a huge success. And your kids have been great, and we're looking forward to working them over the next few weeks.
Thank you. Hopefully we'll have some of your listeners come out, and they could meet those students.
That would be terrific. Aaron Love, thanks, sir.
Thank you.
One More Thing is next. This is the CGP.
Christopher Gabriel returns.
One more thing for you today. Just an observation for you. One more observation for you. And it's about something that I've talked about a little bit lately. And that is how NBA players, we'll just confine this to NBA. We could talk about any league, but we'll talk about the NBA. How NBA players, they have more than the other three professional team sports. It's the most intimate sport. It's the closest that players are to fans than any other sport, meaning they're right there. There's no glass separating them. There's no sideline and 30 or 40 or 50 feet away like football. There's no baselines and what have you in baseball. You be close to them when a guy's trying to catch a foul ball or the outfield wall or coming to the dugout, but it's not like basketball. And for that reason, basketball players, NBA players, should have a much more heightened sense of, you can call it responsibility, or the platform that they have at their disposal beyond the game in terms of how they represent themselves, their teams, their community, not to mention their families. And this is where, going back through the years, media back in the, you know, the 70s, 80s, 90s even, not nearly what it is now in terms of the cycle, the 24/7 cycle, but I don't know that you can teach guys how to comport themselves, but you look at guys like a Damian Lillard, like a Donovan Mitchell. Those guys are so beloved in their communities because they're engaging. They're not going out and making friends with every fan at the games, but they're very engaging. They understand bigger picture. There's some stories about both of them in their communities, things that they've done for people and groups, just remarkable. I'm not saying that every player doesn't do something like that, but not every player does something like that. But what I'm getting at is the other end of that, and that's the guy like Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook takes the attitude, the posture that I don't care. I don't care what you think of me. I don't care about any of you. And there's a lot of folks on social media, and these guys, he's got Twitter. These guys all have social media. They're reading what a lot of people say. They've got millions of followers, so they're not reading everything. But it's so easy, it's so convenient to be a guy like a Russell Westbrook and say, I don't care what you think about me. I couldn't care less. And I just feel sorry for guys like that. Because you have the world at your fingertips. You have so much ability to be a remarkable role model, to be somebody who lifts up the image of a team and the team standing in the community, and you get people behind you. And from the league standpoint, from where it translates into money, you get more people wanting to buy more, in this case, Oklahoma City stuff. jerseys, sweatshirts, hats, T-shirts, and so on. But when you have guys like him that either don't get it, or, as he said many times, doesn't care, that doesn't do his team good, that doesn't do his organization good, it doesn't do anybody in their community good. It makes people turn on them. And that's not what Adam Silver and the league wants. But when you have guys like him who are saying, I don't care, you can't really go anywhere with that. My thanks to Marty Lenz. My thanks to Dan Ruzanowski and Aaron Love and Russ doing his usual great job. Folks, full program tomorrow. We have a full program tomorrow, do we not? Yeah. We'll see you in 21 hours. Until then, you're on your own.